Good evening, everyone. It looks like it's summer everywhere, which is wonderful. During the sitting period just now, I was sitting with my breath. Of course, I always sit with my breath, but I was paying attention to my breath, let's say. Paying attention to the, like in the ancient Chinese version of breath, it's they think of breath as life. And so it's life in and life out. And that's quite a powerful image to sit with. Breathing in and out. And also noticing that as soon as I start paying attention to my breath starts becoming altered. It becomes longer. Usually that's what happens. It becomes like longer in breath and longer out breath, which is kind of artificial. And I was reminded of something Shunryu Suzuki said about right effort. That right effort is to get rid of something extra, which sounds really, as always with Suzuki, oh, it always sounds really simple and okay, sure, fine. But then if we start looking into it, start thinking, okay, well, what does it mean to get rid of? We're always saying in our practice, don't get rid of anything. This is not a practice of elimination. It's a practice of inclusion. So what does that mean to get rid of? And what is something extra? What is that thing that's extra? Well, I saw very clearly when I was looking at my breath, it's the I who's getting involved in my breathing that is extra. And therefore my effort is different. If I'm not thinking about my breath, it's just breathing. Everything is just breathing. The universe is breathing. And there's no problem of care, there can be. I mean, people in North America today are struggling with polluted air. There's been a huge allergy alert in France, and many people who are suffering from allergies and asthma and things at this time. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, and even that, we could say if we get rid of the something extra, well, then our breathing is just like that. It's neither good nor bad, it's just that. But when I come to my breathing with an idea, with a position, with an objective, that's that something extra that Suzuki is talking about. And this applies to so much of our life. This very simple little thing of right effort is to get rid of something extra is really deep and wide in our lives, in everything we do. It's hard to find a situation that where it's not present. Something extra, too much effort, not enough effort, getting rid of, and often we try to get rid of the wrong thing, let's say. We mistake what it is that we need to get rid of. We even misunderstand what it means to get rid of. You know, last week we talked about the karma of tennis. And this week I'm still thinking about tennis. Although I haven't really had much time to watch much of it this week. I've watched a couple of games, but not much. But I did see a photo essay in the New York Times, which was, it was actually quite beautiful, about the clay tennis courts at Roland Garros as abstract paintings. It was really beautiful. And then, you know, I had some commentary and even some commentary from some players, things they were saying. And it's absolutely, it was deeply, one of the players, the Greek player, I can never remember his name, Stefano, anybody know the Greek player? Tsitsipas or something like that. Anyway, he was, I can't remember the quotes, but talking about it as a deeply spiritual experience, tennis. And when I look at it in terms of this right effort is to get rid of something extra, it is. In tennis, whether you know all the rules or not, I think basically everybody knows that you hit the ball and you try to get it over the net and the other player hits it back, right? But every time you hit the ball, it's like breathing out. You have to let go. And you have no idea what the consequences would be. You don't know how the other person will hit the ball back. You don't know where your ball will land when you hit it. You can train and train and train, repeating these motions over and over for years, decades. These players who, you know, in their 20s, and they've been doing this for 20 years since they were 5 years old. Train and perfect, and yet it's still this ultimate unknown. Of how the ball will land, how it will bounce, how the other will respond, how you can't know, because you don't know how the other will respond, you don't know exactly where you should place yourself on the court to better respond. A whole series of unknowns. And as we see time and again in tennis, but in also all kinds of disciplines, when that something extra is present, it's not so great. When we get rid of that something extra is when we excel, whether we win or lose. Whether we make the perfect object that we're trying to create, whether we write the perfect phrase, we give the perfect Dharma talk. We know that we've all had experiences like this. Sometimes we say, I tripped on myself, or I was tongue-tied, or in French we say, you know, it must be emmêlé les pinceaux, I got my feet all mixed up. That's when the something extra is present, when that happens. And so for me, this metaphor of tennis is so beautiful because as this Greek player said, every point you have to start over again. And you can't get ahead of yourself and start thinking of the next points, because then you will not be present for those points, for the next point. So you have to just play the point that is the ball. It's happening now, and then when that's over, you play another one. And the thing with the abstract paintings and the clay courts, unlike grass or hard courts, grass is also, because it's an organic material, something happens on the grass courts too. The grass gets worn down on the areas that are most covered by the players. And with the sun, during the 2 weeks of a tournament, say at Wimbledon, the grass starts to turn brown. So there is an organic something that happens with the grass too. Thing with the clay is, though, that at the end of every set, at the beginning of the match, it's absolutely pristine, perfect. You can see the white lines marking the court beautifully. Everything is clear, clean. And then as soon as someone hits the ball, the dust flies and there's a mark. And then as soon as someone steps onto the court, there's marks. And then the player slides trying to get a ball, there's marks. And sometimes you can't even see then the white lines at the in the where the service line is. And some of the players are obsessed with this. And Rafael Nadal is obsessed with cleaning off that line. So before he serves, he always cleans off that line with his feet. Others don't pay any attention to that to the same extent. So the court is transformed as all of this presence. It starts out with absence, and then presence manifests, and the court is transformed with every point, every step, everything. And then at the end of every set, they clean off the court again. So they have these, you know, ball boys who come out with this long tool and sweep off the court, sweep the court clean again. So it's like a clean slate of absence again. And then the presence manifests again. It would be interesting, of course you can't do it. Maybe it wouldn't have any meaning to do it, but if after every point they cleaned it off. In a sense, it is cleaned off after every point. Because it's a new point. It's a new ball. It's a new breath. So after every set, so if there's five sets, then they five times they come out and clean off the court and it starts over again. And then within a few minutes, it's all this beautiful new painting of clay and human presence. The thing is, so I say presence makes itself, leaves its traces on the absence that has been put there. At the same time, if we come back to this right effort as being getting rid of something extra, so right effort, can we see it like, I'm using these Chinese terms of absence and presence, but we could say form and emptiness and form, you know, or relative and absolute. So presence would be the relative form, absence would be the absolute emptiness. So when we say right effort is getting rid of something extra, it means manifesting absence in our presence. It means manifesting the absolute in the relative. That's what right effort is. So in a sense, if we push this tennis metaphor even further, when we start with the absent court and then presence makes itself apparent, but it's presence that is imbued with or that is, how could that be the verb for it? You know, presence that is manifesting, or absence that is manifesting is presence, something like that. The only thing important to retain is just this right now. If we are present with just this right now, then there's right effort. We're perfectly in place. We will hit the ball perfectly. Now, who were we talking? Someone was talking about archery recently. Is it here where we were talking about it? I forget who was talking about it. Was it someone here on the screen? Who was it? Anyone remember? No.
Antonio.
Oh, it was Antonio. Yeah, it was Antonio. Yeah, that's right. I was talking about archery. And that, the thing of shooting the arrow straight and not hitting the target. So, you know, we could say that the tennis player who hits the ball well doesn't win the game. And it's almost like predictable. The match I was watching, I think it was yesterday, and I could only watch a little bit of it because I had to leave and do something else. But so it was Novak Djokovic, who is the number two player in the world, this like just machine almost player who's so perfected his art to such an extent where he rarely loses. Although he does lose, and he doesn't win every point. He is fallible because he is, everything has a crack, right? And so he was playing against this player who was, no, it wasn't Djokovic, or maybe whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Two people were playing, two men were playing, and I actually watched little bits of two matches, so I forgot. But the same thing kind of happened in both of them. So one player is doing really well, wins the first set, brilliant. The other one seems to be struggling. And then we say, gets a second win, or something happens. It's always very mysterious. We don't know what happens. And then the player who was not doing so well, something shifts. And the other one starts to fade. We always say, oh, it's psychological. One is stronger than the other mentally, and these kinds of things, which is true. These are explanations. At the same time, it's very mysterious. Mysterious in the sense that it really has to do with this something extra. The reason one loses confidence is because this something extra comes in and starts taking over. The reason the other one was not doing so well in the beginning was because the something extra was taking over. Of course, there can be reasons. One of the Greek guys said that he didn't play well in the match that he lost because he had taken melatonin and was not fully awake when he was playing. That was his excuse. Of course, that's perfectly legitimate. Someone can be injured, and that's, you know, perfectly legitimate. On some level, however, there's this something extra that intervenes. Because we can lose the match and still have right effort. Doesn't necessarily mean you will win the match, right effort. So maybe the Greek guy, within his fatigue and tiredness, he was completely, according to his circumstances, it was right effort. So the clay court being a, you know, this beautiful canvas of absence, we don't know what kind of painting will emerge. It's like, you know, we say when we talk about, sometimes we use the image of snow to, you know, look at the landscape, and there's all these things that we can't everything looks the same. When we're talking about the absolute, then we're talking about absence, because there's absence of the individualities, the presence. There's absence of the presence. Same thing with the clay court. When there's no one has walked on it, absence. We don't know how the presence will manifest, but it does. And if we really looked into it, we could see the different grains of clay, and there probably is presence manifest there. But just as an image, before, it's like what comes before comes back to original mind. So the clay court, before anyone steps on it and puts a ball on it, is original mind, is original nature. It's what comes before, original face, something like that. And right effort is that as well. Right effort is what is there before the something extra is added on. I mean, the examples are just endless. I'm sure each of you in your individual circumstances in your daily life, that these kinds of examples come up all the time. Whether it's in cooking or cleaning windows or walking down the street. It's everywhere at every moment. And I read this, something similar. Lao Tzu, you know, the Chinese Taoist, ancient Taoist, said, if you aren't free of yourself, how will you ever become yourself? So if you don't get rid of that something extra, how can you ever be what is not extra? Something. And our whole meditation is about this, right? It's about looking into, like I just sat and looked at my breath and could see what was extra. It became very clear what was extra. And I could see, you know, I could also observe the breath arising and falling away, just like thoughts. And seeing that there was some, what was extra was thinking that there was a place where they originated, the thoughts and the breath, and that place was, is me, is my idea of self, right? So that's the something extra that needs to be gotten rid of, so that it's just breathing or just thinking or just sitting, as we say, or just hitting the tennis ball. And it seems sometimes when you watch a tennis match, you think, these guys, you know, how could they, or these women, because apparently there was an amazing women's match today, but I didn't see it. There's this stadium of people there, all watching them, watching every step they take, every breath they take, every movement of their face and the way they walk and the way they hit the ball and the way they're dressed, and all these people are watching them and cheering or not cheering or applauding or not applauding. And you sometimes, if you think about it, it's difficult to imagine how they can do that if if that something extra is present, that means if they're self-conscious, they have to get rid of that something extra to some extent in order to do that. The same thing is true for all of us, though. We start focusing on the image of ourselves and how other people perceive us. How can we truly become ourselves? You know, how can we be who we truly are if we're completely focused on how other people are seeing us, how we want people to see us, if we're what we're feeling, thinking, saying, doing is right, is if we don't just be, how can we be? Something like that. So that's what this something extra is. Maybe before thinking I have to get rid of that something extra, we look into what is that something extra. And maybe when we do that, we can come back to, it's like seeing the play tennis court before there's been a ball or a step, coming back before that's something extra. Original face, original mind, true self, true way. Again, all of your Dharma names say it in different ways. So you all have that as your koan because you have those Dharma names. But it's every step of the way. So I think I will open it up and let you share or question or reflect. We make the court clean, sweep off all the steps and of my words and marks of my balls I've thrown, and then see what you come up with.
It's only a question. When you make this reflection and this relation between tennis and when you are thinking about this relation, you stop the television sometimes?
No. Well, when I'm involved with watching the tennis match, usually I'm just watching the tennis match. And not, I'm not like thinking about all of this at that moment while I'm watching the tennis match. But it's like, you know, I've done so much sitting with koans and worked with other people sitting with koans that it's this constant fluidity going on of perception of what is, something like seeing what is. I don't really articulate it until I sit down here in Dharma Talk and start articulating it. But the perception of it or the awareness of it is simultaneous to watching it or something, being present with the match, something like that.
I asked only because when you describe this, it's like you sometimes stopped and we see the view. And it's like this abstraction is the I remember the building from, I think is the things from David Opnet, where people are, and then play again. And it was a question because I think you, it's a place of study also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tennis.
Absolutely. Yeah, every place is a place of study for me, a place of practice. So everything is material for it. And there's no place that isn't. The universe is the place of study. It's, yeah, that's true.
Hi, it's nice to see you all. Rochelle, I realize I haven't, that I don't know what this means now listening to you. When you say clay court, is it, do we mean like earth or what is
yeah.
it? So all of a sudden I thought maybe it's made out of clay. It's just regular ground, right?
Yeah, I mean, in French they call it terre battue.
Okay.
But it's in, you know, it's called clay, but it's like a red dirt.
Okay. But it's hard or no?
Yeah, like it's battu, you know, it's like pounded, but it's dust, you know, there's dust. It's hard, but it also has a loose surface to it. It's very different than playing on, you know, cement or some kind of, you know, other kind of court or grass. It's very different.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, maybe I should have specified that. I just was assuming everybody knew, but of course everybody doesn't know. Yeah. Sorry. I'm curious, how do you call it in Portuguese? Does anyone know how you call clay tennis court?
I think they call it, it's like in French, terre battue, terre battida.
Okay.
It's one of the different. There's grass, there's synthetic, and mm-hmm. yeah.
What you were saying brought me back to a memory that I was kind of writing about this morning. When I was a teenager and I met the teacher, Surya Das, at some point I was with him in the subway and I was having my backpack and lots of stuff in there and he was having more or less nothing on him. And he turned to me and he looked at my bag, like, what do you need? And I was trying to remember exactly the way he phrased it, but it kind of stuck. I got stuck with that question. It's like, yeah, why do you have all these, what exactly do you need? And so many times when I go on holidays, I pack too much and I come back, it's like, what did I actually use? And it's always a good lesson. It's like, is there's too much? There's always too, it seems that there is always too much. And out of, maybe I will need this, or maybe it's always good to have an extra thing just in case. And we have all these kind of security blankets. And if it was, it, I think I kept that question because it can be taken as a koan, as a very deep question. What exactly do I need? what's the bare minimum? Could I get rid of this and this and this and this? And yeah, what's the bare minimum? What's the essential? It stuck with me, that question. Got stuck with me.
And that's too, that is exactly the same, what our practice is about too, is, you know, what is the, there's always something extra, or not there isn't, but, you know, it's like that. And I know when, in the old days, when I used to wear Zen robes for retreats, it was so much easier to pack for retreats because I didn't even have to think about what I was taking, you know. I knew I was going to wear that all day, every day. And so I just needed something else to change into for Samu. But, you know, the rest of the time, that was it. And Geno Roshi still maintains that that's part of the reason why she keeps wearing the robes, because it's easier.
Now you just need to choose between your rakusus.
Exactly. Now I have all the other things I have to choose between, right? Yeah.
And pile up the rakusus.
That's right. Color coordinated, and oh, should I wear this one for that event, or this one's better for Doko-san, or, you know, yeah. So always something extra.
I guess we've replaced, we don't wear the robes, but we do wear black. Well, we, not everyone, but I like the black because of that. It's because you just, if you only bring black stuff, then it's easy. Yeah, between a black t-shirt and another black t-shirt doesn't make much difference. So yeah, it's... It feels good to be light. And at the same time, listening to Joa, I have the same issue. Like, I coming back from holidays, always realizing that I haven't used a third of what I brought with me. But I never learn. It doesn't get better. So, how do you strip yourself from everything?
And the more space, well, that's how we function. The more space we have, the more we take also. So in summer we take the big car, and so it's like, yeah, it's okay anyway. Even if we don't use it, we can just pack it. But it gets heavier also. That's the thing. It gets heavier. So when we get the things out, we're like, oh my God, this is so much. This is totally ridiculous.
Yeah, yep, and that's a perfect metaphor for our lives. So. Well, and it's mentioning Geno Roshi, that was among the greatest teachings that I had from her, was living with her and seeing and experiencing and then therefore being transformed by her. She has a really skillful way of coming to the essential, and her, you know, she's really an economist in the true sense of economy, in the sense of just the right amount. And I learned from her, living with her, and I'm much, much, much better at it than I was before that. It's also the fact of my practice of all those years too, but of learning what it is that's extra. What is that something extra? and changes all the time. Like you say, if you have a bigger suitcase or a different vehicle, or you're, you know, like we said, so okay, I don't have to think about that. Now I have many rakusus, so I can think about different ones. When I just had a black robe and a black rakusu, I didn't have to think. It's just it. But then I had to think about, well, where am I going to sit in Zendo? Which seat am I going to pick? Who am I going to sit next to? What job am I going to volunteer for Samu? Or if I was the cook, what am I going to cook? Or if I was the Eno, how am I going to sing?
Well, I think what it tells us also, what we can learn from that is that by giving ourselves, or it's given by someone else, but giving us constraints actually can help us going to the bare essential.
Yeah, exactly. Also. Yeah.
And, you know, we can be pissed off by the airline regulations that only limits us to X kilos. But if we take that into our lives, it really does make a difference. By giving ourselves kind of a discipline that limits us.
That's what all of the ritual and form of our practice is about. Exactly that. Well, in the tennis court, there's lines that say this is where the ball can be played. If there weren't, well, then it would be a completely, who knows what it would be. You know? It's something else. But it helps us to come to the essential, you know, to just what is.
Yeah, Trumka said something like that. He said that he was very much in a rebellion against the structure and the rules. And then all of a sudden he got the, and I kind of went through the same process, being a rebel and at heart, went through the same process of, if you stop fighting it, especially in Sesshin where it's pretty, don't have much time off from the schedule. Once you stop fighting it, it really is, I was going to say, well, reassuring, and you get more done. I don't know. It's effective. It's got all kinds of things going for it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I too was someone who, you know, hated rules and didn't want anybody to tell me what time I had to be somewhere and what I had to do when. And until at some point, when I started practicing, I realized there are no rules, actually. There are no rules. These are all just constructions that we give ourselves to help us, like you said, Debbie, to, you know, it's what we want, actually, to help us be who we want, to help us get rid of something extra so that we can be free of ourselves. We maybe don't formulate it in those terms, but there is kind of a great relief, you know, like Lisa was saying about, well, we just wear black now. Or Joe, you know, the airline limits what we can take. So, okay, there's some relief in that. There's actually great relief in getting rid of this huge attachment to self, and these ideas we have about ourselves. Oh, please, leave me alone.
And doing the requisite everything needs to only the essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Extra. It's a big, big exercise.
But there is something very paradoxical with the practice. The more you practice something that can be boring. When I started basketball, I was watching all these stars that were throwing the ball in the air. So, and I started, and I was doing that. So a lot of people were just laughing at me. They say, but what are you doing? It's not that, that's not basketball, throwing ball in the air and turning around. But I was just having fun. I was free. But at some point, it wasn't fun anymore. So I started to practice the shooting, to practice the dribbling. It was boring. It's boring, but I couldn't stand to be laughed at anymore. But it was boring. But in the end, I was free. I was free on the floor. I was free because then my shoot went straight inside. Then my dribbling was not all around. So there is something paradoxical with the practice. You do something that seems to be boring, and then you're free. And then again, you're doing it right, but you don't know why. In the middle of a match, it's not going inside, so the ball is not inside. So again, you have to let go of everything and go back to the simple practice you're doing because you're not in the momentum. That's the way I saw practice. The right effort, it depends the moment of the match. If you're in the momentum, everything is going inside. If you're not, you have to let go of the winning, everything, and just go back to your fundamental. That's how I saw practice when I was doing sports.
Well, and when you say that it's, you refer to when it was boring. And that when we think something is boring, that's a sign that there is something extra there. Because actually nothing is boring, really. But when you're in that space of, oh, yeah, I have to repeat this, I have to do this again. People always say this to me about breath practice. Oh, no, it's like reverting back to the beginning again. Oh, I didn't want to, it's boring, but it's not. No. The something extra makes it boring.
And that's what makes you free. You're free because you can do that.
Isn't it the boredom itself that is the extra?
Well, that's true, but where is the boredom coming from? You know, it's like because someone has an idea, wants something exciting, you know,
right.
Someone has an an aspiration or an expectation for something entertaining.
Because the effort is not sexy, if I could say it like this. Effort is not sexy.
Fred, what you were saying just now, Freddie, just reminded me of something we've talked many times, I think, in the Guitar Dharma circle. This apparent freedom, you know, we play the instrument, and but we didn't actually learn in a structured way. And actually, then you were talking, all of you were talking about boredom and feeling boring. It seems like it's paradoxical also, maybe, as you were saying. Many times these things are like this total freedom, or this idea of freedom, it can become boring. And thinking about what's extra, if it's boring, like Roshi was saying, if it's boring, maybe there's something extra. I don't know, maybe what's extra, it's because what's extra is wanting something, wanting entertainment, excitement, or something, wanting. And going back to playing the instrument, this structured learning really gives you freedom. It really does. It really does. I see that nowadays all the time. I can do much more. If, of course, if the structure is the correct, I don't know, whatever, it doesn't matter. So you have the structure, and then you have the creativity. And I was thinking, you have the sitting or the session. You do the retreat or you sit, and then you have everything else in your life when you're not sitting, when you're not in the retreat. So it's like this. From the structure, you are so much more free in your creativity, in your life. That's just what occurred to me. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, our structure of our Thursday night Dharma exchanges is coming to its limit. So I guess we will end there. Thank you.